Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Make Comics Podcast for Comics Experience, the show where we talk about and get into the nuts and bolts of making comics. My name is Joey Groh, and Andy Schmidt and I are going to talk through some lettering and caption concerns. How's it going, Andy?
It's going all right, Joey. How you doing?
I am doing okay. I like what we have here. We're going to combine two questions, and what the food for thought is here is, like I said, it's something that I keep coming back to. So, you know, from your perspective, from a writing and editorial standpoint, I'm sure you've seen kind of all sorts of workarounds or all sorts of attempts to make things work. And, you know, to me, I guess it seems like maybe there's one or two ways that are sort of the standards. But anyway, let's get to the questions. We have question number one from at Joseph Adam Davis on Twitter. That's Adam Davis. He asks, what are the pros and cons of captions? That's from Adam Davis. And then James Janowski asks, what is the purpose of a second balloon for a character's continuous dialogue? So we're talking about word balloons. We're talking about captions. We're talking about when you're putting together your script and working with your artist and working with your production team, you know, how are you going to lay things out? How are they going to look? Do you want to tackle it one at a time and get into captions, pros and cons of using captions?
Well, I was going to tackle the second dialogue.
Let's tackle the second one first.
We'll tackle James's first because I think it's the answer is shorter and easier.
So I like that approach.
So the second dialogue balloon, and what he's talking about is when a speaker is speaking, they've got a word balloon, and then there's a second word balloon attached to the first word balloon, and there's nothing else in, like, there's no dialogue in between. Nobody interrupts. But why do you break it into separate balloons? And you can find different people who have different reasons. The reasons that are more artistically fulfilling for those of us that are thinking in terms of, you know, making high art, are it creates a separation. It's sort of like a paragraph break, right? It's sort of like there's a transition there. There's a breath, maybe, whatever you want to think of that might be your reason for doing it. For me, those reasons apply. Like in my own writing, you know, if somebody's going to switch topics, you know, without being prompted by somebody else, then I'm certainly going to start a new balloon with that. You know, it's especially when it's in that sort of a new paragraph sort of scenario. But really, the big thing for me is just keeping in mind that this is a visual graphic medium, and so as you add words to a word balloon, it gets larger and larger, and the word balloon is this big white bulb on your page, and that's going to get larger and larger, which means that visually speaking, from a design standpoint, as a design element, it becomes more and more potent. And because it's a big white bubble, this white hole on your page, if it gets too big, it actually draws your eye away from the art. So the big thing is sort of to keep the balloons in the background, so to speak, right? So that you're not noticing them right away. You don't want the big white dot to be the dominant visual element on your page in most cases, unless right. You're going for a very specific thing. But this is one of the reasons why you might have a splash page, and you'll notice. And sometimes, you know, if somebody's talking a lot on the splash page, which is one large panel, you may notice that balloons on splash pages often are much larger than balloons on other pages, because it doesn't become as big a visual element because the image itself is so big that balloon would have to get, you know, giant in order to really compete with, you know, Dr. Doom, you know, fists raised and energy crackling all around him.
Right.
So as panels get smaller, balloons tend to get broken up more and more. And sometimes that'll happen at the lettering stage, that you'll start to get the lettering back and go, oh, I need to break this up because my balloons are now covering up, you know, especially as the panels get really small. You know, my balloons are, I can still see this guy's eyeball, but the rest of his face is covered by this giant word balloon.
Right.
So that's really it. There's sort of those two, the two rationales. One is sort of a visual graphic design rationale, and then the other is a more artistic flow of the way you want the word, you know, the words to flow or the way you want the thought process to flow. Both, I think, are totally valid. I use both in my own writing. So, yeah. So I think that one's pretty easy because it's two pretty clear, you know, pretty clear reasons for that. For Adam's question, what are the pros and cons of captions? This one's a little bit more involved. So captions, just a quick sort of definition of captions, are words on the page that aren't word balloons. So they're not what people are speaking out loud, right? We all kind of know what word balloons are with the pointers, but a caption is usually contained in a box, or you know, it might be a fancy box, like it looks like it's a letter or something like that if it's supposed to be handwritten. You know, you can do all kinds of things to dress it up, but captions are boxes, are in boxes, or you know, it's writing that's not in a box, just on the page. But anyway, a caption tends not to be spoken dialogue. There are very specific cases where it would be spoken dialogue, but let's just ignore those for now. So captions are typically some sort of narration or exposition for the reader. So if it's exposition, so if you've got a caption that's just giving you the date, the time, the place, that kind of thing, that's not really a narrator. That's more like, you know, what you get in Law and Order, the dunk dong, it's now Tuesday at the whatever, you know, right. It's that. That's not a narrator, right? That's not a voice.
Right.
So the use of those can be helpful. But then the narrative captions are tricky because that can be first person. It can be stream of consciousness. It can be third person omniscient. It can be an unreliable narrator. So the pros of captions in the very broad sense are they can be really powerful narrative devices when used for storytelling purposes. And what I mean by storytelling purposes is when not used just for exposition.
Right.
So the cons of captions are the opposite of that, which is when you have captions and they're really there for expositional purposes. So they become, you've probably heard, Joey, I don't know if our listeners have heard this, but you've probably heard that captions are a crutch, that captions are just info dumps, you know, stuff like that. Those are the cons. If you're not using your captions effectively, then that's what they are. And it became really commonplace that, you know, especially in ongoing sort of superhero comics, that you might have a first-person narration or even just a stream of captions that are omniscient, that are just like, you know, this is Batman. Batman is Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne's a billionaire. Billionaires are cool. This billionaire likes bats. He fell into a cave, you know, and just gives you all that stuff, you know, and I think most of the larger companies with that sort of stuff have gotten a little smarter about it. They've got like a little boilerplate thing that they kind of write to make it more exciting.
Right.
Remember when I was working on Avengers, it was like, you know, there came a day when, you know, and you kind of make it sound exciting. And that would go recap page or something like that. So that if you were familiar with Avengers, you could skip it. So, you know, in very broad strokes, that's the thing. And most people that are writing captions, most writers, especially new to the medium, that are feeling it out, and this is fine. This is all part of the process you go through as you're learning something. Most people that use captions are using it to give information to the reader, primarily. But you don't want that to be the primary reason. The primary reason should be you've got something you're adding narratively. And anytime... And then the other con comes up, and this is sort of unique to comics as a medium, is it becomes very easy to tell your story in the captions instead of telling your story in the art. So there is a larger tendency, we'll put it this way, there's a larger tendency if you are writing a script with captions, first person narration, your main character is narrating, to have a page of talking heads that have captions over it that actually tell what's going on. It's just sort of a danger. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily something that could happen. It could be quite different. But, you know, I'm actually working on a story for myself right now where where I think there's going to be a lot of captions in it. And that is the thing that sort of that I want to make sure I've got that really under control. And I'm using those from a narrative perspective rather than an expositional perspective. And it's kind of scary because if you get a book with a bunch of captions that are really just info dumps, it will kill your book.
Right.
Like instantly. So broad strokes, that's the pros and cons of captions. The other thing that sort of goes with all of that stuff is that you've got to keep in mind that if you're writing this, that this stuff all winds up on the page. So your page can get really cluttered because the temptation is to have dialogue and captions in one panel. Because you're like, oh, I could just throw this in the caption here, or he should think about this response. So and so says this, I'll respond in the caption with what he's thinking. And that you can start to get cluttered pages and they're sort of lettering. A skillful letterer will be able to put a lot on a page without it, really disrupting the art or the flow. But every time you're adding a balloon or a caption, you're adding visual elements that are going to go into the design of the page and need to be dealt with and need to be dealt with in a way that they don't interrupt the flow and the style of the art. And so that's another thing that is sort of concern with both captions and, and that goes back to what we're talking about with James's question about the second dialogue balloon in continuous dialogue is how do you get these to flow properly within the visual flow of the page? So that's it. Bam.
Bam. Captions. With captions, would you say typically they're going to be used more as scene sets more often than not in contemporary comics? Is there kind of a rule of thumb where people are inserting them to say, our location, 5 years later, is it something that is used as part of the establishing shot and getting into where you are as a sense of place and time?
Yeah, sort of my litmus test is, there's sort of, for captions like that, my litmus test is do I need it? Right. If I don't need it, if there's an establishing shot and the establishing shot is the Pentagon,
right,
then I assume the Pentagon, if drawn correctly, is recognizable enough that I don't need a caption, that says the Pentagon. Like, if I have that, why did I bother asking an artist to draw the Pentagon?
you should ask Jerry Bruckheimer, because that's right. Something that you so frequently see in certain action films. Right. When you do have the shot of the Pentagon that says the Pentagon, United States, or whatever, and I always wonder with those, am I just being too critical? Is it something that maybe an international audience, maybe they need that reference if somebody's reading it, but then I would think that, well, that would get translated and that would be in a different language. And
well, in a film, it's a little bit different, right? Because it makes that establishing, it justifies that establishing shot being on screen just a little bit longer,
right?
And you don't have that time component in comics. So, but then the other thing is, well, once you do it once, should you be consistent about it? Like, once you've changed location and you say the mountains of Tennessee, and then you change locations and you've got a shot of the Pentagon, do you put the Pentagon in just to be consistent that when you change locations, you have this thing? So you just got to decide that on your own. I tend to be a little bit less, rigid about that as a rule. Like, if it's just intuitively obvious, I probably won't put a caption on it. So for those, my rule of thumb is if needed, I'll use it. If I don't need it, then I'd prefer not to. And that's kind of, and then with captions themselves, there are two litmus tests. One is, and you'll find people that, what's funny about this is you'll find people that will tell you that one is good and the other is bad, and then you'll find people that will tell you the opposite of that. So the first litmus test is, if I strip out all my captions, like all my narrative captions, can I still generally understand what's going on in the story just by reading through it because of the art and all and the word balloons? Can you understand the story?
Right.
If so, you will find some people that say, then that's good because you don't want your you want to make that's good because you want to make sure that you're showing, not telling.
Right.
Right. Then you'll find other people that say, no, that's bad because it means that your captions aren't adding anything to the story.
Hmm.
So, so there's that sort of litmus test. So there's the other camp that says, if you strip the captions out, you should be missing a piece of the story because it should be integral. Because, and the argument there is that yes, comics are dominantly a visual medium, but they are not only a visual. Well, I guess they are only a visual medium, but you know, they're dominated by the images. But it's not just images; it's images with words. So the words should be an integral part of the stories. If you've got captions, they should be an integral part of the story. And that's why I tend to really like things like the unreliable narrator, because the unreliable narrator is very, very much like an active participant. There's a thing I do in my advanced writing class where I go through like all the different kinds of narrators. And a lot of people think there are only three. And I can tell you there are like 12.
Hmm.
There might be more. I mean, there are some that are sort of debatable. Well, maybe that one's kind of like this, but there are a ton, and they all have different really dramatic uses. And most of those come from, most of those have really been developed in prose. But when you come to comics and you can bring something like that to it, you've got an element now that probably nobody else on the stands or very few other people on the stands are using. To really get into this, to drill down deep, I mean, it's like two nights of, 2 hours of classes for in the advanced class for narrator and what that does, and then or what it can do to help story. On the flip side, you've got all the stuff about it being a visual element, about the lettering and all that kind of stuff going on. So yeah, there's a lot more to it. A lot of people really don't think about the narrator being that important, but it's hugely important.
And I feel like the overall kind of idea is something that the more I write scripts and the more I see art come back and the more I get the lettering proof and the more I see the coloring, the more these things are part of my early on kind of thinking, in the sense of not necessarily like, oh, I'm going to throw out convention and have this really cool unreliable narrator that you don't see frequently, but to at least go through that checklist of, okay, how am I being consistent and how can the story be told differently or more effectively in a way that engages. And I think that, for me, going through it and making more comics and thinking about it more just in terms of, here's my establishing shot, Washington, D.C. Okay, and now, hey, we're in Washington. The very simple kind of examples. But it really has impacted the way that I try to think about, even just from a plotting standpoint, how is this going to be communicated to a reader? Is issue one from a character point of view? Is issue two from a different character point of view? Does that play into the overall arc? Can everything be sort of like that? What are the best ways to approach it? And I think, again, for me, the more I've gotten into it, the more I feel like that's kind of opened up for me, whereas kind of scratching the surface and just sort of learning the language and figuring out how to put something together, it's certainly a consideration, but it's nowhere near the consideration that it's morphing into.
Right. Yeah, and I think these are all things that you were saying there are things you think about early on, and they are things you should be thinking about early on. I mean, I'm not going to say that you can't read your comic once it's all lettered and then go, I've got this great idea for narrative captions. It could work that way. But probably, if you're not planning for it, it's not going to work that way all that well.
Yeah.
These are things you want to know. I mean, it's the same sort of thing. It's like, what's the point of view of your story? Like, are you doing, there are some comics that are told essentially first person because you follow one character. If that character isn't in the scene, you don't get to show that scene.
Right.
Right. I mean, and there are, first person narration captions. I mean, you look at Watchmen and it's got, it uses captions all over the place. So, and very effectively, and one of the things that a caption can give you, if it's in first person, it can give you insight into a character. It can give you their voice and their attitude and it can give you some background. I mean, it's not like you need to avoid exposition at all costs in captions.
Right.
But you just have to make sure you're using it for a narrative storytelling purpose. So yeah, I mean, I think captions and dialogue. I mean, they're obviously related, given that they're both text on the page. But But I think we've covered the broad strokes of pros and cons.
I think so. I think the capsule and read, the end. No, I think it's a good food for thought, and it is something that I feel like can get a little bit neglected, at least in my thinking. And I wonder if that's true for other people that are coming at it from a writing and an art perspective, maybe, and not putting a little more forefront. So great for me to kind of think through and to hear your thoughts on it. With all this in mind, I know on the comics experience side, there's courses offered on lettering and production. And the overall kind of writing, I'm sure it also comes into play so much on the art side. I don't know if you have any classes that you think specifically might be beneficial to somebody if they are looking to learn more about the lettering side.
Yeah, this February, all of our four core intro classes all start up. So there is a lettering class which we offer once a year. That's starting up in February. Which is a phenomenal class for writers, artists, and obviously people who want to letter. It's also the class that, if you are making comics, will pay for itself the fastest if you start lettering your own books instead of paying somebody else to do it. So the lettering class is awesome. Dave Sharp teaches it. It's, I think, 7 weeks long. And it goes into production work, too, which is great. It's not just lettering, and then for writers, the intro to writing course starts up in February. The intro to art course starts up in February, and the intro to coloring class also starts up in February. We didn't talk about the coloring of captions, but we should have talked about that. So I can plug that course more. But yeah, we have all four of those courses are starting up in February.
Nice.
And there you go.
Nice. That sounds like a good opportunity. And boy, I can attest to, the more you learn lettering, the more you learn the overall production, I think the better, at least I feel like it's made me better at just overall making comics.
It's shocking how much that will improve your writing as a writer, because I know you write too, and I primarily write more than I draw, but also, I mean, artists should be when they are doing their layouts and penciling their pages, should have, you know, that script, you know, if they've got that full script, which hopefully they do, you know, they should be taking into account, where are these going to go? And they should be thinking, how am I going to design these in so they don't interrupt? It always shocks me that how many artists don't do their own balloon placements and give those to the letterer. Those often come from an editor or from a writer. And I don't know why that is, because the artist is the one who's sitting there going, this is how I'm leading the eye.
Huh.
So why would you let somebody else do it? It shocks me. But it shocks me so much that it shocked me the first time I saw an artist who did do it.
Huh.
And I remember this distinctly because I was an assistant editor at Marvel, and we were working on a miniseries of The Thing from Fantastic Four, written by Jeff Johns, and Scott Collins was the artist, and Scott sent in pages and he had laid out where the balloons should go, and it was the first time I'd seen it, and I'd been working there for months, you know, seeing pages every day come in from people. And I was like, wait, why is he? And it was like, why is he doing that? And then I thought about it for 2 seconds. I'm like, oh, that's really smart. Like, and then I was just confused why more artists didn't do it, because you'd think they'd want that kind of control of the visual flow.
Yeah, you would. Huh, interesting. Well, if you have a question that you'd like to hear discussed on Make Comics, you can email info@comicsexperience.com. You can also tweet @comicexperience. That's Andy on Twitter, just like these questions came through. Until next time, keep making comics.